Well, as a colorectal surgeon, this is one of my favorite things to introduce. I've known Chuck for many years on the board of colorectal surgery, but the real reason I invited him is because one day we were having a discussion. He talked to me about a dinner he had when he was a resident. He was invited with attending and several other residents, and one of the things on the menu was a 72-ounce T-bone steak with beans, potatoes, and Texas toast. And if you could eat it all, you got it free. Chuck finished that and asked for a second. Chuck, I don't know what that has to do with rectal foreign bodies, but...
Oh, we gotta get ourselves back to... all right, you guys got to... Somebody smarter than me's got to...
Yeah, it should.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, you go. You just click once.
That would be the entire room, actually. this is one of those things that the novelty of this talk has suffered from the internet, because now y'all can be on your phones looking at all these pictures already. So a little of the novelty's worn off. And it is not going to be less. It's going to be more less G-rated than the previous talk. My consultancy for Boston Scientific has nothing to do with this. This is a week ago Friday. In our practice, a little home toy that got out of control and couldn't be retrieved at home, so had to come in and be removed. Every now and then you look at some of these and you think, what is that, and how in the world did that get there, and how are we going to get it out? And that's a marble egg. I like analogies. I was a chemistry major, and we always talked about, you know, the chief cause of accidents in the lab is horseplay, and it's all fun and games until somebody gets an eye put out, and here it's all fun and games until it gets stuck in the rectum. There's fascination with this everywhere, right? There's a rock band called Rectal Foreign Bodies. It's not new to us, though. This has been going on for a long time. This is Vlad the Impaler, Romanian emperor from the 1400s, who used to impale people transrectally for execution and just the sheer fun of it. King Edward II was reportedly killed by a hot poker passed through a horn in his anus to make sure there was no external evidence. There seems to be some dispute as to whether or not that's actually the truth or not. So when you start looking at series, and there are not all that many series reporting rectal foreign bodies, there's a ton of individual case reports that people have, but the few series out there, typically there's a vast male preponderance, most commonly in the age range of 30 to 50s for the mean, but age is no barrier to having a rectal foreign body inserted. For the most part, these present the same day or at least within the first week, over 90% of them, but I did see a case report of one that was actually 5 years out when it reported. This is from the Peter Cataldo Personal Library on loan. Thanks, Peter, for that, and the accompanying toolkit that came with it. When we look at how they get there, there's certainly a fair number fall into the eroticism category, but there's also concealment, which typically is of opiates. There's attention-seeking behavior, and so there's the same kind of concern for psychologic evaluation sometimes that has to be taken care of, like we talked about with the urologic foreign bodies. Assault, sometimes things are left in as people try to treat their constipation, and also ingested foreign bodies. And this is an example of something that's made it through the entire alimentary canal, which is just a bone that had to be removed surgically, a little bit of anal laceration accompanying that. There are multiple schemes for how we classify rectal foreign bodies. One is to just use the AAST rectal injury scale, which was meant for penetrating trauma but actually can be used for this. There's sexual versus non-sexual. There's those foreign bodies that are placed in a voluntary manner versus involuntary. And then also there's the location, those that are in the rectum versus those that have migrated. And that's a key feature because those that are proximal to the rectum are much more difficult to remove than those that have remained in the rectal vault. There really is no limitation to what people have tried to put in their rectum or put in somebody else's rectum. That's just the trauma score. And here's a not all-inclusive list of those, but ones that have been reported, and many have been seen by the members of this panel. So now this is time for the what is it. Those of you playing at home will need to score yourselves, okay? Got false teeth and a soldering iron. Flashlight and a vibrator. The cylindrical objects are common and easy to remove. And now we're going to go to round two. This is double what is it. This is the more complicated ones. Can't explain why. This is an age discriminator here. Right? This is Miss Butterworth. And just a side note, I didn't realize that there was a whole kind of industry around decorating Miss Butterworth jars. Those topics aren't related, by the way. They don't have to be replaced rectally in order to decorate them. And then this is the final. All right. So frequently these patients present a little bit embarrassed, obviously. And up to 20% of them don't disclose the reason they're there as this foreign body that they obviously knew about. For assault, you have the overlay of the psychological trauma, the fear and the embarrassment, and this is obviously a very sensitive issue, and we're going to talk about that here in a little bit. The symptoms are nonspecific symptoms. On exam, we're looking to assess what's the sphincter tone. Is there evidence of disruptive injury to the sphincter itself? Can I feel the foreign body, blood? And then for the abdominal exam, really the main thing we're trying to figure out is do they have peritonitis, because that's where the algorithm changes. In order to deal with these, you have to be non-judgmental, maintain a sense of professionalism that both protects patient privacy, and it's probably in your interest to kind of counsel your staff to keep their comments to themselves, or at least to make them well away from the hearing of the patient. And then for assaults, you want to make sure that you have a resource for your institutional protocols for suspected assault. This is a patient who's an assault victim who I met in the OR in lithotomy, her entire omentum coming out of her perineum. External sphincter disrupted here. Rectovaginal septum disrupted. This injury went up about 20 centimeters in the anterior portion of the rectum. This doesn't show up very well, and I apologize for that. Sphincteroplasty has been performed. This is posterior vaginal wall. And then at the completion, she was diverted for several months. All right, so impediments to removal. There's the proximal migration, just like we mentioned. There's also this change in the axial alignment where if you've got especially a cylinder and it's moved sideways, that makes it a little more difficult to remove. Entrapment, so larger foreign bodies in the rectum that can't be manipulated because the bony pelvis prevents the movement. Bowel wall edema, especially as you're trying to bring things proximal to distal. And then there's also this luminal collapse with proximal suction, and we'll talk a little bit about that. The typical injuries we see, mucosal laceration, perforation, and sphincter injury. Standard vibrator. This is an algorithm from a nice article that Kyle Colon and Glenn Alt wrote, and it starts with the peritonitis. That's the initial decision point we have to make. If in the absence of peritonitis, then we can go through our algorithm of removing things. And basically, the way I like to look at it is more just a incremental approach from the least invasive to the most invasive. Aerosol can. I think these were removed from the market because of this problem they had. Transanal removal. So where you do this, most articles you'll see talk about doing this initially in the emergency department. I think that's fine, but you got to know your own hospital and where you can get things done best. I typically either go to the endoscopy suite if it's something in the rectum or straight to the OR to be able to sedate people and do a good anal block. And that way, all the tools that I want, I can get to much quicker than working in the emergency room, unless it's something that's just really going to come out easily. I prefer to do them in lithotomy so that you can have abdominal pressure to push things more distal. If the patient's awake enough, then they can Valsalva for you and help out with that. And then exposure is important, A, for removal, but also for minimizing injury to the anal canal and the distal rectal mucosa. A couple of tools, you know, one is the Lone Star, which gets the skin away from where you're going to be bringing the foreign body out. The Alexis wound protector is good for things that are not too sharp, and then like the Ferguson plastic anoscopes or the Tamis port or a Tims port would be useful for that. To break the suction, several things have been described. The most common is a Foley catheter that's placed either just with your finger or with a clamp or a proctoscope. And inflated, that helps both break the suction, and you can use it to pull down. People have described using multiple Foleys at one time as your traction device, or if you need a bigger balloon, using a sink, stake, and tube. All right. This is the use of the Foley catheter to get out a mandarin orange. Snares are useful for larger objects. An obstetric forcep and then a good process to use for things that can be broken up is morcellation. Utensils. All right, so we tend to use the tools that we're familiar with. Obviously, biopsy forceps can, if they're large enough, can be used. Any type of clamp that we commonly use, polypectomy snares, several balloons, and then the obstetric devices, tenaculum forceps, or even a vacuum has been described. I will say, if it's a concealment issue, and you're working with, you know, a bag or a condom that potentially has opiates in it, you don't want to use anything where you're likely to tear that, because then you get absorption. Here's the use of the Sills port, similar to using a Tamis or a Tims. The endo bag, I thought this was a useful idea. Sometimes the biopsy force, the polypectomy snare is not forceful enough, and this is the endo bag ring. Is much more aggressive and lets you, I think, get better purchase. And then for things that are puncturable, you can use a myoma screw. I have not used that technique. All right, operative extraction. And I have not seen as many of these, so I had to borrow a picture from the internet for this one. Basically, though, you can do two things. One, you can use your abdominal approach to help milk the object back into the rectum and then use one of the techniques we just talked about. Or, in the absence of the ability to do that, then you make a colotomy, remove the foreign body, and do closure. If there's perforation, then the principles of any colon perforation as far as doing a resection, anastomosis, diversion, depend on the state of the patient and the degree of contamination. And then when you get done getting the foreign body out, you want to take a look, see what kind of residual trauma there is. Typically, we'll observe these patients for 24 hours to make sure they don't develop peritonitis, unless it was the most straightforward thing. Or you can use imaging if it's equivocal, whether you think they've started to develop peritonitis or some untoward effect. So here's one that could not be removed transanally, removed through a colotomy. This is an eel that was removed transabdominally after it ate through the rectosigmoid. So most of these can be removed at bedside, about 75%. Of those that require laparotomy and colotomy, Again, those are most commonly going to be ones that have migrated proximal. So maintain professionalism when we deal with these. The stepwise management with the outline, and Tom Reed gave me a tip on trying to prevent future episodes. Just tell him to put a string on it. Thanks.